So this is a Russian Imperial Stout called Eyeflatat Yakult. How was that?
Really horrible. It's actually Eyeflatat Yakult.
Eyeflatat Yakult. Okay, well, let's talk about the beer.
All right, quieting down now. Live from the Brit and Yankee Pub Studios. Another Brit and Yankee craft beer pubcast. I can hear the pints being pulled right now.
Knock the wild dune, bring the drums in, let's have a party. Pump up the bitter. Shh, test it. Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter.
Take it away, lad. You are paying for that beer, aren't you?
Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter.
Hello, mate.
Hey, Phil. What's going on?
How you doing? All right. This is show number 280. Oh, only my goodness, 20 Lord. More until we reach the 300 here.
Wow. Yeah. Seems like only thing. Yesterday.
Now, we're sharing a mic, so you're going to have to bend your little...
I got
to
lean into you a
lean
little
into,
bit.
Yeah, so don't get too close. Okay. Yeah,
well, I didn't shave, so watch out.
Oh, all right. We are doing a remote broadcast today, if you will, a remote recording. We have come some...
3 hours.
We have come some 50 miles or so south of West Chicago, where the Brit and Yankee Pub is, and we are in Crete.
No,
Crete. Not Crete, Crete. In... Greece,
oh,
Ireland.
I was going to correct
Crete,
you.
Illinois. We okay. are down here in the south side, if you will. We're fortunate enough to be sitting here with Evil Horse Brewing Company master brewer, Steve Camp. And next to him, cozying up, because they're cozying up like we're cozying up, because we've only got two mics.
That's right.
Is his lovely wife, Amy. Hello, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Hello, Amy.
Hi, how are you guys?
I'm good. Real good. Thank you very much indeed. We've had a bit of a day getting down here. Well, he did and I did.
Yeah.
enough of that, the fact that I missed the exit. My wife's car is in the garage. All sorts of other nonsense going on. But who cares? Because in front of me is beer.
Oh, yeah.
And so before we get any further, Steve, what's that first sample beer? And then we'll start talking about Evil Horse.
Okay, the first sample beer is Balmoral Best Bitter. We do, all of our beer styles are very traditional. I don't really do a lot of gimmicky beers. I don't haven't put chicken in beer or waffles. Yeah. So this one is a pretty basic example of a best bitter. It's about 4% alcohol by volume. We use all English ingredients in this. It's English ale yeast with Maris Otter's, the base malt in it. There's some Munich malt just to give it some color. But now that, well, I've got a Brit here, you can tell me what you think of the best bitter.
Well, I was...
Now you're on the spot.
No, I'm on the spot. I was extremely excited when you said this was the best bitter. One of my... I'm from the south coast of England. One of my key breweries is Harvey's down in Lewes in East Sussex, I think it is now, because they broke up Sussex to be West and East.
Oh boy.
And I know, you can't keep anything the same, can you? And Steve's saying goodbye to some of the locals. Bye, guys.
Well, that's one of my assistant Brenton and his two golf buddies. So
They've been golfing. There you go. What a good place to come back to after a round of golf. So anyway, back to the story. So Harvey's does one of the best beers I taste in terms of bitter, and that's their Sussex. As I taste this, I get that low alcohol but big flavor coming through.
That's the
maltiness is as it should be. It's not hot forward, but there is a little bite back there that, you know, it's just enough to keep you interested. Mike, how do you like best bitter?
I love this. This is really nice. I mean, you hit all the key points here. It's not overwhelming. You got some flavor. Definitely something where you could have a few pints and
enjoy
after a nice golf game and not worry about being impaired or anything like that. This has got a great flavor, great taste, and as you said, there's that little bit of bitter on the back end, It lingers for a little bit, but just long enough.
So do you find when you tell people this is the best bitter, that people go, "Ooh, bitter, I don't like that." Because, you know, that's the whole problem, isn't it? It's not really bitter, but they call it bitter.
Well, that's a real problem. When we first came out with this beer, we called it Balmoral Best Bitter, which we still do. But that was the exact comment every single time. No, I don't want anything bitter. Yeah. Well, it's like, it just means beer with hops, but it's hard to tell that to people who...
What's in the name?
Yeah. We tried just calling it ESB, but ESB, of course, is a trademarked... it's not really a beer style. Right, it's Fuller's. Yep. Yeah. So this would fall right in the middle. It's not a special bitter. It's a little lower in alcohol, so it's... but still lots of flavor. It's all East Kent Golding hops. That's where the bitterness comes from.
Right.
One of my favorite beers that we have, just because it's such a nice, easy-drinking beer... the whole idea behind bitters, nice, knock back a few pints without having too much, pie-eyed effect.
And have you tried putting this onto a cask, so effectively attempting to make a real ale?
I've thought about that. It's just our location here. I don't know that a lot of our customers would understand the whole cask thing. It'd be the drinking warm beer thing.
Yeah. Please, room temperature.
Yeah, thank you. But we may do that at some point, maybe for a festival or something like that, where people understand the style and you know, real ales better than, you know, we want to make sure that it's received the way it should be.
It's an alternative, I think, right?
Yep.
So you said something there about it being down in this particular area. We've been out to a couple of breweries that have been in, what should we say, rural areas compared to, you know, where we're living in the Chicago suburbs, which I suppose Crete really is a Chicago suburb almost.
It is
now, right?
Yeah. No, it is, yeah.
But let's call it more rural, with all due respect. But do you find that the people are looking for something that's a little more traditional in terms of the American lagers?
Well, yes. In fact, we have a beer on tap. I don't have it in the lineup here, but it's called...
Damn it, we'll get it in the break.
Doggone it. Well, it's called None the Wiser, because people would come in here when we first opened and said, just give me whatever tastes like Miller Lite.
Yeah.
So I kind of thought, well, they want Miller Lite. We'll brew some Miller Lite. So it's actually a little more full-bodied than Miller Lite. It's all Pilsner malt. There's no corn or adjuncts in it. But that's exactly what that's for, because we are in a, I would say, primarily Miller Lite, Coors Light type area here.
Right.
So people are learning about beer as they come in here, and it's kind of what my thing is.
So tell us the story of Evil Horse. You've been open for how long?
A little over 2 years. We opened years. April 29, 2016. So I have a farm. It's called Evil Horse Farm because... Well, my ex-wife and I used to have a horse whose name was Dreamcatcher. By the way, we have a beer named after Dreamcatcher.
It's all matching up, Mike.
Yep. Yeah. However, Dreamcatcher was the most miserable, ornery beast you've ever met in your life. And I think she walked around for 2 years and everyone was afraid to ride her because she just didn't want anybody to ride her. And so we named the farm Evil Horse Farm.
Yeah.
I just always thought that'd be a cool name for a brewery.
So you came along with your idea, and you've got some investors that have said, yeah, we want to start something, which is kind of a bold move down here.
Right. Well, we don't have a lot of breweries really close by here. This was a bowling alley for many years. This building is a kind of a historic building. It's been many different things. It was a granary and a auto repair shop and a dance hall and a bowling alley. And it was sitting here, and some friends of mine who are the investors or who own the building wanted to use their building for something and thought that maybe a brewery would be the way to go, since there's really nothing immediately close. So, and I'm the guy they knew that knew how to make beer. So it worked out for me.
So from, we'll actually come back to the building in a little bit, because I think I wanted to just get a little bit more history on it, if you know it. But from the aspect of your background, you've, as I understand it, got quite a history in brewing in one thing or another, right?
I've been a home
brewer. Give us your bio.
Okay, there you go. I've been a home brewer since 1983. The Chicago Tribune ran a thing for Christmas about, you know, what do you give people who you don't know what to get them? And homebrewing kit, I thought, wow, that'd be a cool thing. I've always been, even as a kid, I collected beer cans and always was interested in beer and started brewing, I think, right when I was 21. So always been interested in traditional beer styles. Mm-hmm. Back in those days, there was no craft beer. So if you wanted to try beer, you had to buy imported beer. And a lot of times it wasn't very fresh when it got here. That kind of pushed the need to, you know, if you wanted it fresh, you're going to have to brew it yourself. So
what sort of time frame were we looking at here? What year?
1983.
Okay, 83, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And I've been here since 1980. And I echo what you were saying about craft beer. Mm-hmm. You know, not being available, and along comes Killian's. Wow, we've got something that's a little bit different. But now look at Killian's, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. Well, actually, the first craft brewery probably would be Anchor Steam, yeah. Since they actually had a traditional beer style that they brewed. And they never went out of business, thanks to Fritz Maytag, who bought the brewery. Several others followed shortly thereafter. But I would think he's probably the first, you know, the first craft brewer, so to speak.
Was he the Maytag from the
Wash Machine Company, oh, yeah.
So, yep. So he cleaned up then.
Oh, you betcha. Oh,
thank you very much. Right. And with that, no,
yeah.
But carry on, sorry.
And blue cheese as well.
And blue cheese, yes. That's right. Yes. Yeah, Maytag blue cheese, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that all came from the Iowa Amana colonies, right? But around that area, was that where he came from?
No, he's from San Francisco.
Oh, San yeah. Francisco. Okay, never mind.
That was the Amana colonies. They had a brewery there. One of the earlier craft breweries was in the Amana colonies. They had a deal going there. But anyways, I homebrewed for a long time. I've won lots of awards in homebrewing competitions. I had a Pro-Am beer at the Great American Beer Festival that I brewed at a brewery not too far away called Flossmoor Station.
Oh, yeah. We know Flossmoor.
Yep. Yeah. Yes. I actually won a homebrew competition a few years ago and got to brew beer out at Lagunitas in California. And, I know a lot of people in the craft brewing business. I've been a beer judge since 1986, so I'm fairly well versed in beer and beer styles, and yeah, so I've been doing it for a long time. I was the president of the Chicago Beer Society in 1986 and 87, and I run into all these new brewers now. It's like, well, I wasn't even born till 94. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm old, I know. But
and I will say the one thing about you, Steve, and there'll be pictures out on the website, is you do have the beard, but you don't have a bald head.
I don't have a bald head, and I only have one tattoo.
Oh, really?
But you can't see it.
Is it visible?
No.
Oh, okay. Say no more. We don't want to go there. Yeah.
I do wax my mustache, though, so it's just not waxed today. So
wax off?
Yeah, that's right. You know. Yeah, so that's kind of what my story is.
What was the first beer you ever brewed, then?
The first beer I ever brewed was... It was from a kit. It was an English ale kit of some sort, and it turned out god-awful. It was terrible.
Mr. Beer?
No, it wasn't Mr. Beer. There was a homebrew supply shop on the north side on Irving Park Road called Brewin' Beer, and that's where I got my first equipment from, and it was the only place you could really get brewing ingredients from, and a lot of times they weren't real fresh. The second beer I brewed there turned out excellent. I'm a big fan of Hefeweizen.
Yep.
So my favorite one, I wrote the brewer at the Tuckerbrau Brewery in Germany, and the brewmaster wrote me back and told me kind of what the breakdown was, and that was my second batch, and it turned out great. So I was kind of hooked from that point forward.
So you have been doing these a few years, haven't you?
Oh, really? Yeah.
I mean, so do you ever get tired of it?
No. It's beer.
And with that, we'll take a break. We're back here with the second beer. And this one, I believe, is called Sergeant Reckless, right?
Sergeant Reckless, yes.
Okay, so there's a story behind Sergeant Reckless. Now, hang on, am I going the right way? This one.
That is correct.
And he's got that one. All right, there we go. We're opposite ways, Mike.
Oh.
Yin and yang, aren't we?
Yes, indeed. We've been that way for a few years now.
So, tell us the story of this and what's the style.
Okay, so this...
Well, maybe I can guess. Carry on and tell the story.
Well,
guess
the style. Kind of the background on this, it's an American Pale Ale, Sierra Nevada.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, there you go. Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, that was kind of one of the first nationally produced, you know, or available, and you could never get it. If a store got that, it was gone. Now, that was sort of one of the trendsetter beers in the whole craft beer movement. The Sergeant Reckless story, though, is very cool. So during the Korean War, a group of Marines bought a racehorse from a family in Seoul, South Korea. The horse's name was Sergeant Reckless. Or no, the horse, it had a different racing name, but they called her Sergeant Reckless. It was a mare.
Korean.
In Korea.
Yeah, there
yep.
you go. Korean Sergeant Reckless.
Yep. So it was a recoilless rifle platoon, and they needed a pack animal to transport the rounds, which I think weighed about 80 pounds apiece, to the front line. Well, they had lots of horses, but Sergeant Reckless was so smart that no one had to lead her, and then she would take injured soldiers back to camp on her own. She was shot twice. She earned 2 Purple Hearts and actually achieved the rank of Staff Sergeant.
Wow.
Slept in the tents with the soldiers. Really a cool story.
Well, there had to be big tents for get a bloody horse in
there. That's right.
Right.
Well, she... she's listed as one of the top 100 Marine war heroes.
Wow.
Pretty cool. When we first started, we thought it was a good name, a cool story. Well, yeah. Then we met a woman named Robin Hutton. In fact, this Saturday is Sergeant Reckless Day here at Evil Horse Brewing. Robin has tried to really promote the Sergeant Reckless story. She wrote a book, and she's trying to do a movie. We were just at the Kentucky Horse Park.
I was going to say, this is perfect for a movie. This is but in a different version.
We were just at the Kentucky Horse Park where they had a statue that they unveiled of Sergeant Reckless. We actually brought 75 cases of our beer down there, and the horse park sells it. They actually had 4 veterans that actually fought in the war with Sergeant Reckless. So very cool story. The beer itself is an American Pale Ale,
mm-hmm.
as I totally screwed up and didn't let you guess.
That's all right. No, it's your show, Steve.
Yeah, it's all American or North American malts, primarily two row brewers malt. There's 5 different hops. It's dry hop with Simcoe, which is a more kind of dank variety. It's got kind of a piney, slightly citrusy aroma and aftertaste. Really a nice beer. It's about 5.5% alcohol by volume, and nice drinkable beer. But where the bitter would be probably the beer that this was originally styled after. Mm-hmm. The Americans got to do things bigger and better, so they added more hops and, you know, made the flavors pop a little bit more.
Goddamn Americans!
Yeah, and all them goddamn Yankees. Isn't that a movie? Anyway, I like this a lot. Now, Mike has a thing for some of the extra bitterness in hops. He does not really into that.
Yeah,
but,
I'm not into SPAs.
This is not. Yeah. So, what do you reckon about this?
This is really good. I've had Dale's.
Oh, you finished it.
I've had it several times, and not because they're sitting here. I would drink this over Dale's any day, because I don't like
it
that
is.
Super.
I was trying to think of what it
I don't
me.
Like the super hoppiness, but I appreciate the smell, the flavor, and everything. The hoppiness in this, I actually get it on the back end myself.
Yeah, well, it's actually
right there.
The whole idea is all of our hoppy beers are more balanced. If you're a real super hop head, they may not be your favorite styles, but you know, we're selling beer to maybe a different group of people. You know, we sell some beer in Chicago, but we're selling beer primarily in the south suburbs.
Yeah.
So I'm shooting more for balance, which I think is what you'd get on this over a lot of other pale
this
ales.
This is really a good starter. If somebody wanted to get familiar or have somebody, you know, get into something a little hoppier, a little different, this would be a perfect one with training wheels to get them into that realm.
Where none the wiser, and then a Sergeant Reckless.
There you go.
Yeah,
there you
well,
go.
Exactly.
I'd personally go for the bitter, but
yeah.
So with respect to, you said about selling the beer. When I first came here, I think you've been open for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, something like that. And since then, as I look towards your brewing area behind us, we're sitting in the tap room, and the noise you hear outside is the traffic, because we're sitting, it's a very nice evening, but there's still, you know, almost on the patio. It was a little too noisy for the patio. And as I look over there, I see that you have extended things a little bit. Now, I think round the corner, you've got a canning system. Is that right?
There's a bottling machine.
Well,
it's kind of a sore spot for the whole group, because we've tried to get that sucker running right, and it's going to take some work. We'll say that. We do canning and bottling,
okay,
but we generally bring in a mobile canner or bottler at this point until we get our volume to the point where we need to have our own equipment for it. I haven't given up on the bottling machine yet, but
So for the bottling, the 22-ounce bombers, you're kind of reserving that for some of your more special beers. We'll come to those shortly. Mm-hmm. For the canning, I haven't seen it anywhere up north, but I know on your website it tells you, you know, all the places you can get your beer.
Mm-hmm.
What's the furthest north spot, you know? Yeah, geographically,
it's Richmond, Illinois is the furthest spot.
I don't even know where that is.
It's right on the Wisconsin border.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's a bar there. I think it's called the Brathaus. And actually, they have our beer, and it ties in with the whole Sergeant Reckless thing, because they were some of the horse people who were here for that. We're doing an event up there, and they requested the beer, and the guy loves our beer up there. So that's about our farthest north. Farthest south is, well, I guess Lexington, Kentucky, but we self-distribute in Illinois.
Okay.
We have some accounts in Northwest Indiana, but primarily we're trying to focus on Illinois. Just because we can self-distribute, mm-hmm, other states, we have to have a distributor in order to sell beer, which for packaged product at this point, the way we're doing it, it's very expensive to do. And then once I understand the role of the beer distributor,
right,
and everybody's got to make money, but it's, for us, as small as we are at this point, it really doesn't make much sense to try and do that now.
So let's talk some stats then. What's your barrel size, and what are you producing?
The brew house is 15 barrels. Mm-hmm. We've got 3 15 barrel fermenters and 2 30 barrel fermenters. We'll do double batches to fill those. Say if we're doing a bottling or canning run, we'll put that in the bigger fermenter, and obviously just to have the beer on hand and to sell. Our excellent sales staff is really picking up the sales here.
He's pointing at Amy.
and
slapping her on the leg.
Yeah, that's right.
Go there.
we're really trying to expand in Illinois primarily. Mm. And you know what? If we could expand in Will County, Southern Cook, and in Kankakee County, there's probably enough places here where we could probably max things out, you know, but there's always more.
Yeah, there's always more. And there's a lot of competition out there, because, it's just, we're doing a series of podcasts up and down I-55, and there's 9 breweries mm-hmm. within 4 miles of an exit,
mm-hmm.
So that's 9 to start with. And then you've got all the other ones that are popping up. So, but down here, your closest is probably going to be the Flossmoor and Tinley Park area, right?
Yeah, Flossmoor is probably the closest brewery to us.
So tell us a little bit, or tell me, because I'm interested in that. Now, he and I went to Flossmoor a while back.
Yeah.
Must have been at least, 4 years, 5 years ago. Always thought it was a really cool place. Love the restaurant, because they've got the train that runs around the top,
mm-hmm.
and you're sitting there. So, did you start it out, or did you just come in and brew there? And,
no,
and is any of those wonderful recipes yours?
Well, they've brewed. One of my recipes was called Frankenstein. It was a Dortmunder lager, and I brewed that there. And they have brewed it again.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be the only recipe I have there. I did, however, Todd Ashman was the brewer there back in the late 90s.
Okay.
The 90s or early 2000s, I don't know. The time is a blur.
Yeah.
Todd brewed a beer there called Imperial Eclipse, Russian Imperial Stout. So back in the day, my sister used to work for Jim Beam. So Goose Island started doing barrel aging, with their Bourbon County Stout.
Right.
Well, Todd thought that was a cool idea, and he was talking to me at our homebrew club Christmas party one year, and he's like, I want to get some whiskey barrels. I'm like, oh, dude, no problem. My sister works for Jim Beam. So they sent him some barrels, and I actually helped him brew. It wasn't my recipe, but I helped him brew the first batch of Imperial Eclipse Stout, which he won a gold medal at Great American Beer Festival. Cool. Wow. So,
nice.
Yeah, that was, yeah, I like to think I have at least something to do with that. But, yeah, Booker No from Jim Beam. Everything went through Booker, and Booker sent them some barrels for free. Back in those days, they couldn't find places to get rid of barrels.
Big truck going by.
Yeah.
So do you still have that association? Whoa, there we go. There's a guy on a Harley.
Party.
Now going past. Do you still have that association with Jim Beam that you can get barrels, and do you?
Let's talk about
barrel aging. You know?
Well, actually, I've talked to Freddie No, who's Booker's son. I can't get barrels from them anymore. They do all their barrels through brokers now. We've done some barrel aged beers. One of them is in front of us here. To keep it more local, I got the barrels from the Koval Distillery in Chicago.
Okay.
Little bit smaller barrels, takes a little bit less aging time. Mm-hmm. This particular beer, there's a story for this. There's a story for everything.
I'll tell you what. Let's break up here, and then we'll hit that beer.
I don't want to break up.
Oh, okay. Breaking up is hard to do, I know. But, you know. And then we'll come back and talk about this lovely darkness. And I know we've got one other beer, which is lighter, but I just can't wait for this one. Let's take a break.
All right.
Our next beer I've been looking forward to for quite some time. In fact, I think recently you released the New Year's version of this.
Yep.
We like to say for beers like this that they're our leather chair and cigar beer, even though I don't smoke, but I'll sit in a leather chair and I'll sip this. Now, this is a Russian Imperial Stout, and I'm going to give the name a bit of a go here.
Okay.
And I'll probably bugger it up completely, and then we'll go to the expert, okay? So this is a Russian Imperial Stout called Ayaflatatyokult. How was that?
Really horrible.
Okay.
It's actually Eyjafjallajökull.
Eyjafjallajökull. Okay, well, let's talk about the beer.
Okay, well.
So what is it?
So anyways.
This is your kick-ass Russian Imperial Stout,
well,
I have to say.
I was at Dark Lord Day one year, and, I mean, back then a $15 bottle of beer was really expensive. Now there's all kind of $15 bottles of beer. In fact, now there's $20 and $30 bottles of beer. So I'm thinking I could make this at home. So I did. I made my own version of Dark Lord at home, and let's just say I brewed a pale ale first just to have enough yeast to ferment the really strong, Russian Imperial Stout. I was a little disappointed. I didn't think there was enough yeast left in the fermenters, but brewed the beer, put it in the fermenters, got up the next morning, and the lids from the fermenters had exploded off the top. There was black spots everywhere within 20 feet of the fermenters, and the foam was coming, the Croizen was coming down the sides of the fermenters like lava. Well, that just happened to be the exact same time that the Eyjafjallajökull volcano in Iceland was erupting.
Ask where the name came.
Now, that was the one that covered Europe.
Right, with ash.
Okay.
And closed down.
What was the name of that volcano?
Eyjafjallajökull.
Yeah, I love to hear him say it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
So anyways, I was a little nervous. The one lid had flipped over, and the airlock was laying down in the beer. The other one was gone completely. It blew off the table and under the somewhere, and I finally cleaned all the cobwebs and the critters off it and put it back together. And, well, anyway, the beer turned out really good. So anyways, decided to brew that beer here and barrel age it. That was just aged on oak chips.
Okay.
But this one we barrel aged. So like I was telling you before, we use Koval whiskey barrels from the Koval Distillery in Chicago up on Ravenswood. There's honey in it. There's molasses in it. There's brown sugar in it. There's lots of different things to boost the flavors and alcohol. Yeah. Overall, it's a pretty smooth beer. It goes down very easy for a 12%er.
Oh, it goes.
Oh, I was going to say
it goes down too easy.
Yeah, because if you wouldn't say what the alcohol was on it, and you gave it to somebody to drink, they go, well, it's really good. It's nice and strong, but you don't get any alcohol burn.
No.
And that was some of my biggest complaints with a lot of these people that brewed the bourbon aged, you know, and barrel aged in bourbon barrels. It just, you take it, it was like taking a shot of whiskey. I'd rather have the whiskey than, you know, trying to enjoy a sipping beer. And
so this is from the name, right? The volcano, it's deep and dark, but at the bottom of it, you've got something bubbling that's lava that really is, you know, hot, and that's probably what you get, the 12%, right?
Mm-hmm.
12%. This is one of these beers that every time I drink it, there's something different going on. It's very complex. There's chocolates, there's licorice, as you said, molasses. Oh, I love molasses, I gotta tell you. And it's just, I just want more people to find this beer, because I think it's one of the best kept secrets around.
Thank you.
And it is,
you've
nice got to
push
and
this up, mate.
It is nice and warming too.
It is nice and warming, but we are, it's a beautiful day. Was it 86 degrees out? Yeah, it's a nice evening. Sounds like there's some fire going on somewhere in
there's
the
some malfeasance going on.
Yeah. Oh, it's coming through here we go. Yeah, and it is.
They want their growlers. They want the growlers.
Holy cow. I was doing an interview. Oh, another one. Here goes the fire department. So now we've got sound effects here, which is really cool. So this is just something that you got to get. Hopefully this will get the word out. Do you still have bottles? I mean,
we do.
Release it once a year, right?
Yes. We actually released it this year on Dark Lord Day, which, after thinking about it, probably lost a few customers in the process.
I'll tell you what, Steve, I'd rather come here and line up for a bottle of this beer than line up for bloody Dark Lord any day of the week.
Well, so. I think those guys are doing something pretty cool over there, so it's all good with me. But honestly, yeah, we do have the beer available. It's on draft. You can even get a keg of it if you're really thirsty. And we have it in 22-ounce bottles. So, yeah, it's available.
So, barrel aging. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're limiting that, but this type of beer, I would think, would be just a fabulous one to buy a couple of bottles of and then put one aside.
Mm-hmm.
I have a rule that I only put a beer aside for a year, you know, and then I'll see if it's changed, mm-hmm. You know. Any thoughts on doing anything else along that line?
Well, you know, actually, one of the things our homebrewing club did, so I was the single dude in the homebrewing club with the house, so we did a lot of barrel aging in my house, in my farmhouse in Beecher. And we did a lot of different beer styles. I was able to procure barrels. We were good friends with the guys at Goose Island, and we could get barrels from them sometime. Mm-hmm. Anyways, yeah, we did an Imperial Saison. It was called Farmageddon. Apparently, there's a brewery that has a beer called Farmageddon. It actually, it finished at 0.0093. It was 15%. And
Means what?
It's specific gravity. It finished at 0.0093.
Is that good or bad?
Well, that's below. That's less than water.
Oh,
so,
okay. Water is one then.
Water's one, yeah. And it was about the color of Miller High Life.
Wow.
Oh, is it good? It was really amazing. It had a little bit of Brett in it, I'm pretty sure. I think there was maybe the barrel got contaminated a little bit, or my basement maybe got some bugs floating around in it. But it's an old farmhouse, so you never know. Yeah. We did a blonde Doppelbock and seasoned the barrel with brandy.
Wow.
We did
now
one.
That sounds interesting.
We did a lot of really cool things. Blondie wine. We did a blonde barley wine. It was 100% pale malt and whatever hops people had. That was the first one we did, and that was probably in the early 2000s. So I've been doing a lot of different barrel age stuff over the years, and I would like to do. We did the Tennessee Tornado. That was a little bit different. At this point, barrels are no longer free.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem.
They found out.
Yeah, it adds quite an expense to the the whole recipe thing. But we do plan on doing some more barrel aging. It's you know, it's pretty good. People really like it. We were at in FOBAB last year, the Festival of Wooden Barrel Aged Beers in Chicago. Great beer festival, except Uber at home, please, because it's everything's
a killer, man.
Yeah, it is. It's a rough one. But yeah, so it's I judge FOBAB as well. It's okay. It's really the whole barrel aging thing is pretty cool. So,
all right, I gotta. I've been thinking about the demographics for the area and how good this Imperial Stout is. Now, I'm going to give you $1 million idea, and you can run with it or whatever before
and
somebody
else. 10% already. Oh, no, that's all he wants.
Just want I want the first glass, but I got the name of it. Make something similar to this. The gin is getting to be popular, gin barrels. But the next time you do something like this for the demographic in this area, it seems like you should call it Boilermaker, a shot and a beer.
There you go.
Oh, right.
I like that.
Okay.
Boilermaker.
I'll have to look it up for all of our beer names.
Isn't that the name of a university team?
Well, yeah, but that's a team. But
I don't know where it is. I don't know.
I was just there today. I was at Purdue Northwest.
Oh, that's Purdue, is it? Okay.
Yep. I brought some beer samples to be analyzed. So, yeah.
Yeah. We'd go into the bar and we would get a Budweiser or some other crap and have a shot with it or drop it in and... Mm-hmm. Do competition. You know, that's the way what I grew up on.
I see where you're going, Mike, but I'm gonna have to,
I like the idea.
Well, I'm gonna have to pull
there
I'm gonna have
be
to pull back
to
on
it,
that
but
one.
I you know what as good as this is.
I just want this.
I'm not saying this is good.
And I have to
but
say
I'm saying if he did something a little different, you know,
you're right. In fact, the Koval Distillery actually barrel ages a gin. So I can get gin barrels from them. I mean, there's people that use tequila barrels.
Yeah.
Wine barrels have become pretty popular.
Oh, yeah. Just put a thought in it. Get hold of a port barrel. Port wine just makes things better.
Yeah.
Okay? So I can see a dinner party with Steve. We're going to have this for one of the courses. Maybe the dessert course, right? Maybe drizzle this a little bit around some beautiful French vanilla ice cream. And then to follow up with a nice port, something rich and fruity, just to offset the darkness of this.
You got the whole pairing down pat.
Talking
Phil,
you're making me hungry.
All right. Yeah. Talking of pairings, do you do any beer pairing?
Yeah, we do.
Like
we've done several. I like doing that stuff. I make wine as well at home. I also I cook quite a bit.
Okay.
My wife likes it when I cook.
I love it when he cooks.
I usually use every pot in the cabinet, though, so it's you know.
So you cook, she cleans.
That's trade-off. Hey, that's Kevin. What dishwashers are for. Wait a minute. Yeah. So
yes, we've done quite a few beer dinners and beer pairings with food. One of the more interesting things that a lot of people don't realize is that beer actually pairs with cheese better than wine does.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Cheese and chocolate, some of the real good pairings that we've seen too.
If you think about it, beer and cheese basically have the same ingredients. Basically they're grass plants that cows eat or the brewer brews, and you know, it's they both come from grain, basically.
And if you have a milk stout, you're even closer, right?
That's right.
There we go. We'll come back in just a little minute because I have to enjoy the last sip of this particular one.
Will.
I will say that, you know how they say you can have too much of a good thing? A snifter of this can last you for probably 45
sitting
minutes.
Sitting out on your deck having
and
a snifter of this.
And as it gets warmer and there's more flavors released and things start to happen. And,
there you go.
Okay, all right.
Now that my mouth is drooling, shut up and pause this thing.
Okay, we'll do.
There's a lot of breweries that have a lot, they'll have 14 hoppy beers on tap. You know, all and everyone's got a different dry hop, or it's a different this, or it's a weeded IPA, or this or that. We have 14 different unique beers that are traditional beer styles.
Right.
And that's kind of what my goal is to stick with traditional styles and not a lot of, you know, real gimmicky stuff. Tomorrow we're doing the second time we brewed it.
Yeah.
We're doing a raspberry Berliner Weiss, and that's only the second time we've done a fruit beer.
Yeah.
It's a kettle soured Berliner Weiss. The first time we flew through it so fast, it was ridiculous.
So have you ever thought of doing just the traditional Berliner Weiss and then providing the syrup?
Yes. In fact, we did that for a long time. We didn't have any sours on tap. So you could get a shot of like Amaretti fruit syrup to our, I think we did the Downtown Hottie, which is our American wheat, and the Leaping Bull, which is our Hefeweizen. Which both of them were very nice with the shot of fruit in it. So we have done that.
Okay.
But now we'll probably have it on tap tomorrow. Sorry, you guys are a day early.
And a dollar short.
Yeah. So we did the first time we did it. It was a collaboration with Arrowhead Ales from New Lenox.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So it really, really turned out nice the first time. So we thought we'd do it again, and it was very popular. We just started doing beer cocktails. You could sit around. We're a manufacturing brewery, so we can't have any other alcohol in here. We can only sell our beers. The Illinois Brewers Guild is trying to change the law on that, so we can at least bring other brewers' beers in or ciders, because we can't make cider or mead here either, because you need a winery license for that.
Even though both of them are considered to be a beer,
more
style,
of a
right?
beer style product, yeah. My thing is traditional beer styles. Mm-hmm. We do a Weizenbach in the fall. We've got an Oktoberfest that we brewed last week. No pumpkin beer. Thank you.
God bless you. Boys. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah. 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 Our fall beer is an Oktoberfest and a Weizenbach. No pumpkin beer. Sorry.
Two things that I really don't want in my beer. Pumpkin and coconut.
Banana.
I don't want my beer to taste like a hair product. But anyway. Moving on. So we are sampling our final beer for this show. It is what looks to be a very nice either. I've been trying to determine what the style is.
It's a golden. Golden Pilsner almost.
Yeah, I'm thinking it might be a Pilsner, but it might.
Ding,
be
ding. Nice job, Pilsner. Mike.
All right, okay.
So, anyways.
What's it called?
I had a sip.
It's called Segerbrook. It's named after the building.
Okay, nice.
Crete has a large German heritage. A lot of German people live here. So, when we bought our system, we can do decoctions on it. Mm-hmm. So, we can brew actually not just traditional styles, but use traditional techniques. So this beer has got a single decoction. It's primarily German Pilsner malt, not English.
We forgive and forget.
That's right. It's all German ingredients, it's German hops. It's Hallertau Mittelfrüh is the hop in this one. But it has some of the Meliard process character that you would get in a German or Czech Pilsner. That really nice caramely flavor without being sweet. You know, it's still fairly dry.
Yeah, I'm getting a dry finish. Yeah, mm-hmm. I want to have another sip. That's always good.
It makes you want to go back for more.
So you mentioned the name Segerbrook? Segerbrook?
Segerbrook, yeah.
Segerbrook, okay. So this building, you mentioned it earlier in the podcast, but it used to be called the Segerbrook House?
The Segerbrook Building,
yeah. It has a history of many different things here, right?
Many different things. It was a granary. It was like a feed mill. It was a dance hall. It was a roller skating rink.
An insurance house, I think.
It was an insurance company here.
How old is the building?
I think it was built in 1919. It's on our website. I'm not exactly sure when it was built.
Hey, I've got the notes, so look it up.
They actually reinforced the floor on the second floor. The second floor was a auto repair shop at one point. So there was a ramp up the back of the building that people would drive their cars into the building to do auto repair. So
and if you come out to the building, you'll see why we're saying wow, because you know this. What is it? 10-foot ceiling you got here? Okay, so you got quite a high ramp you got to go up there.
Yep. Yeah. Well, it's so. The main thing it was for a long time, it was a bowling alley. It was Crete Lanes. We did find a lot of like memorabilia and pictures, and the sign is still on the wall there. That was the original neon sign that was on the front of the building. We got it, redone and took one side of it off to put it on the wall there. The bar and the back bar are bowling lanes. The two long tables are both bowling lanes. So, yeah, when we...
Was it a Brunswick lane?
Brunswick?
I used to work for Brunswick. That's why I ask.
You know, a lot of the stuff said AMF on it, so I'm not sure.
All right.
It could have been. Yeah. I don't really know, you know. But everything was still here when we started, so it all had to be demoed. All the pin setter machines were still in the back.
Wow.
You know, we had to take everything out of here and, you know, took a lot of work to get the place to look as nice as it does. So
you brewed this particular beer, which, what are we looking at? This is a 5% something?
It's 5.2% ABV.
Yeah. Very nice.
It's a traditional German-style Pilsner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bit more hoppy than, say, like a Munich Helles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a nice malt profile to it. You know, it's got a lot of Pilsner malt flavor to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Lately, this has been my favorite. It goes down easy.
Well, maybe because of the hot weather, right?
Yeah.
Well, it is.
This is really good.
That's
beers.
What the whole idea is. We do seasonals. We do a Doppelbach in the springtime, which is, if you guys want to try one, you better do it soon because it's about to run out.
Oh, okay.
We do the Pilsner for the summer. We do the Oktoberfest in the fall. And then we'll do some sort of a holiday beer. So we do some seasonals. Our Hefeweizen was supposed to be a seasonal, except it's one of our more popular beers. So we keep it on tap all year round now.
Now, when you say you do seasonal beers, what do you do, like, in the wintertime? Do you do any more dark beers, any porters or anything
like
that?
Well, we have our porter, which is actually one of our four core brands. It's called Pax and the Ponyless. It's a English-style porter, so it's not a real – it's not – a lot of people, like, think
it's porters – it's not overbearing.
It's not overbearing, really sweet. It's got a really nice dry finish, and it's extremely chocolate forward.
Oh.
In fact, most people think there's chocolate in it.
Yeah.
We use 10% brown malt in it, which would be traditional in England, which I think really imparts a nice chocolatey coffee flavor in it.
Yeah.
But it actually tastes like there's chocolate in it.
And that comes out when?
Right mid palate. That's out now.
No.
That's year round.
No,
where does it come out?
When does it come out?
No, it's that's on tap right now. We keep that one on tap year round.
Oh,
yeah.
Great. Well, we'll have to try that.
Like I said, we do a Weizenbach. Just nobody makes a Weizenbach, and it's very popular with a lot of our customers.
So what's the most fun beer that you like to brew?
They're all my children, so I really don't know.
Ah, it's like
I love them all equally.
We have our double IPA series. It's trying to name beer is almost impossible nowadays. I'll look up Boilermaker, but if you go on Untappd, I almost guarantee you there's probably 20 of them already.
Yeah.
I decided, okay, the first hop we used was Equinox. So, you know, Equinox. I came up with the word lupular. So I made up my own word. It's kind of like a cross of lupulin and vernal.
Yeah.
So vernal equinox, lupular equinox. So it's a hoppy, it's our double IPA.
Who says there's any rules when you have to name beers?
No, right.
They only complain if they know about it, right?
Right.
It's better to ask forgiveness than it is permission.
Exactly. Well, so the hop we use it. So what we do is every batch is the same recipe. The grain bill is the same. The hop schedule is the same. Mm-hmm. The only thing different is the dry hop. And every one of them has been distinctly different just because the hops are so different. We did one with Laurel, which is kind of closer to Hallertau. Like, it's a real high alpha Hallertau derivative. That one was a lot more grassy and herbal. The last one we did was Comet. So it's a lot more citrusy, and it's actually, I'm really liking the Lupular Comet. But that's a fun one to do just because it's, you know, more artistic, I guess.
You like traditional styles and things. Mm-hmm. Boadicea hops.
Boadicea. I can't say I have.
A very rare British hop.
Really?
Which, if you go out, it's listed, but you try to find it, bloody impossible. But I said, that would be brilliant if you brew a British beer with Boadicea hops and you call it Britannica.
Right. Oh, there we go.
Well, let's go to the lovely Amy. Do you have a preference?
Well, you know,
You've been so quiet, we got to pick on you a little bit.
Right now, my preference is Segebrook. And I'm going to preface that with, before Steve and I got married last fall, I drank an unnamed light beer that he's forbidden me to drink anymore.
Brewed by the devil.
So I tend to go from different styles of beer. I started out with Trot Hopple, super hoppy beer. Now I am into the Segebrook. That's my favorite. So I can't pick one that's my all-time favorite. Okay. I go seasonally.
Okay. Well, fair enough. That's good.
So if you had to drink one, what would you drink, Steve?
Right now, Segebrook is probably again. My favorite yeah. one because it's seasonal. Yeah. It won't be around long. It's yeah. selling pretty well. Yeah. I love the Balmoral, and that one's going to be gone soon.
Yeah.
Trot Hopple's always my favorite. I've always been a big fan of...
Which one's that?
The Trot Hopple's our IPA.
Okay.
And we didn't have that one here today. Yep. So the story on that one is every single word with the word hop in it has been trademarked by a brewery. Well, we had a harness racing track down the street, Balmoral Park, which was open when we first started, and then it closed. You know, so it closed because, well, for whatever reason, but it's still there.
Nobody knew what harness racing was.
it's the guy on the sulky behind the horse. So yep, it's a guy, yep. a horse pulling a buggy.
Yep.
One of the devices they use on the horses to keep them on gate is called a trot hopple.
Oh.
And that was not trademarked, so we quickly did trademark it. Yeah, so
you do actually do a little bit of research to find out whether or not you can use a name, and then
you actually
trademark it then.
Well, we've only trademarked a few of the beers, and we just literally had a cease and desist with another brewery because they named their beer Sergeant Reckless.
Oh.
Well, if you go through the process and pay for the trademark and do the whole thing,
Was it for the same reasons, or was it for a different reason, a different story?
I don't know. I don't know. If we ever decide to go national with the brand or something like that, we don't want to run into. It's really kind of sad that that's what the whole industry has become. But there's so many breweries.
That's right.
What used to be just fun and everybody got along now is kind of like, wait a minute. Your IPA looks just like my IPA. You can't do it that way.
Well,
you know,
I think there's still a level of what I like to call co-opetition.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
It's competition, but cooperative. I've found that. And
collaborations are a really big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have. Well, we've done one so far with Arrowhead.
I've been
talking with a couple other brewers that really want to do a collab, so we'll be doing more as time goes on. At this point, we're trying to ramp up our production, so I've been focusing a lot on our core brands, the Trot Hopple, the Downtown Hottie, which is our American Wheat, kind of a Spotted Cow-esque type beer, just, you know, real easy drinking, people like. Something for everybody, you know. Yeah. The Paxson is one of our core brands. We haven't canned that or bottled that yet. And the Sergeant Reckless, those are our main brands that we've trademarked.
Speaking of your production and stuff, now are you the sole brewmaster here, or do you have somebody?
I have two guys that are helping me out.
Okay.
So I'm the head brewer. I formulate all the recipes and, you know, kind of keep things on an even keel.
Yeah.
I should have started this when I was like 20 years ago.
You're still having fun.
Yeah, oh, I'm still having fun. Yeah, where everything didn't hurt every morning when you woke up. You know, but anyway,
make those noises.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you and me both. I tell you. Well, Steve and Amy, thank you so much for taking time out on your day. Maybe we can head back to the brewery and just take a couple of quick pictures out.
Sure, absolutely.
And I have to recommend everybody should take a little trip down south and visit Crete. Come to the brewery. Awesome logo that you have, by the way.
Thank you.
The horse. And it's ingrained into the wood that's over. I'm looking over next to the dartboard. I'm glad to say you've got a real dartboard.
A real dartboard, yes.
It's real dartboard, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the $64,000 question. What's your phone number?
555-5555. No, the brewery's phone number is 708. 708-
304-2907.
All right. And where can they find you in Crete?
1338 Main Street, Crete, Illinois. It's right on the corner of Dixie Highway and Exchange. We're on the northwest corner, easily accessible to Indiana. If you take 231 West and follow it, it turns into Exchange.
And if you're coming,
and don't go to Indiana like Three Floyds. Come here. Yeah, right. It's much
come
better.
Come here, absolutely. Yeah, and if you're coming from the north,
there's no door from the Nazi. West,
come down I-355.
Well, yeah,
head over on 80, down 294, or come down 294. It's it's really easy actually to find.
It is. Actually, yeah. Illinois 394 is 2 miles east of here.
Yep.
You can get that right off of 294, I-80, and 94. I-57 is just a few miles west of here, so we're actually pretty accessible.
What events you got coming up in the future? Anything to plug?
Next Saturday we have Sergeant Reckless Day.
Oh yes. What is Saturday. It? Saturday. Hang on, Amy's whispering.
It's this Saturday.
It's this Saturday.
This Saturday.
Steve.
This Saturday, next Saturday.
So probably today.
Yes.
Well, hey, isn't the next Saturday this Saturday? That's what I'm saying. Yes, the 28th, and we'll have actually there'll be some real horses here.
Really?
We're bringing some Clydesdales in. They're therapy animals. They're very
not
huge.
Not the Budweiser Clydesdales. No.
No.
They're Shires, probably.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, we're doing that. There'll be a lot of cool stuff going on. So, yeah, come out for Sergeant Reckless Day.
Right.
We're doing the Brewmasters Golf Outing at Balmoral Woods on
August 18.
You can buy tickets on the Balmoral Woods website.
Cool.
Part of the proceeds go to a charity.
All right.
What else have we got coming up there?
If you sponsor a hole there, can you actually play with the brewmaster?
You know what? Funny story. The brewmaster can't play golf right now because he hurt himself playing golf.
Oh.
Yes. I tore a muscle in my arm on the 4th of July, and I haven't been able to play since. So
that's what my excuse is, too.
Yeah, right. I just can't play golf.
Well, I can't play golf either, but at least I swing at the ball every now and then. But
I play the beer cart.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I prefer the après golf. Oh. I always prefer the après ski, too. Yeah. All right, well, we raise our glasses, even though they're empty at the moment, but I'm sure we're going to fill them up.
Isn't that a sacrilege?
But we say good night from me.
And good night from him.
And thank you, Steve. And
you're welcome.
Cheers. And thank you, Amy, for joining us. Cheers.
All right, you distract them. I'll get the wild horse.
Okay, good man.
Or the evil horse.
No, the evil. No, it's the volcanic Icelandic thing.
Bombers,
that's what we want.
Okay,
we want that one.
Say no more.
Over there, Steve. Look over there.
What?
Britain Yankee! Britain Yankee! I'll have a pint, Yank. Go, give us a pint. You got any tetanus? A pint, please, Bob. Give another pint, please, Bob.